Aloha, welcome to Dolphinville Radio, www.dolphinville.com. Douglas, also known as Dolphinus, here in Dolphinville Radio, sitting in Kealakekua, the magical seat of wisdom and divine feminine energy here on the Big Island of Hawaii, right in the middle of the Pacific, largest geographic feature. We're sitting with Dr. Michael Sala and Angelica Radcliffe. They're in a very special kind of partnership. Michael's been on the show in the past. We've talked about his scholarly approach to the subject of exopolitics, better known as what the government has been doing about the extraterrestrials for all these years and not telling us. He's been a guest on several radio shows throughout the country, and he's written the books and given lectures. And last year he met kind of hooked up with Angelica, dealing with the extraterrestrial phenomenon, that both bringing their own very unique sensibilities together to form yet a third sensibility, a third point of view, if you will, where the two of them mixing their energies together do provide us with a new level of information. I like to think of it as partnership information, where both are contributing to a synergistic awareness and a new level of stuff that we need, information that's coming in now. So welcome, you guys, Angelica and Dr. Michael Sala.
Thank you.
We're sitting here in their garden home, beautiful flowers around, flowering energies, and the divine feminine energies, which I think where Angelica, this is where you come in. You seem to be able to provide a balance point here, and it's really great to see you guys in action. You guys will be in action, and you're starting to get some seminar work together. We'll talk about that as we get into the show. You're here living and working on the Big Island. The two of you have had some unique experiences with bringing in some of the awareness, and I want to talk about that. Let's just briefly catch up where we were. The last time that we talked, Michael, was you were just kind of moving here and changing your life and going through some dramatic shifts, looking for a new way of expressing this information. How has your life changed since, about 8 months ago?
Well, it's been a really exciting change. I mean, what I was doing in the Washington, D.C. area was doing pretty much straight research on the extraterrestrial presence, finding out what it was that was being hidden by the government, exactly what it was that needed to be done to deal with that, try to expose the cover-up that existed, and putting together books and articles and just putting that information out to people. When I came out to Hawaii to attend Joan Ocean's workshop, and I subsequently met Angelica, what I found here was that there was a very different energy here, and of course the dolphins were a big part of that. And so that got me moving away from the kind of purely theoretical work on extraterrestrials and making people aware to the more kind of practical hands-on work of, well, you know, here are the dolphins, they're willing to interact with people who swim out with them, they are able to produce a certain effect in people, heighten their consciousness, and how does that relate to the extraterrestrial presence? So that was really, for me, the key. Mm-hmm. And so since that time, I've been working on that and trying to work, put something together with Angelica to really bring together the dolphin energies on the island and the kind of extraterrestrial research that I've done.
Mm-hmm. It's more of an experiential venture, where more of the other cerebral investigative, looking through papers and trying to put the threads of information together, and then something now is dropped down, mental connecting with the heart. And I would blame you for that, Angelica.
Well, thank you very much for that.
Your heart being, and of course you were drawn here to be with the dolphins and whales and have been involved with the extraterrestrial phenomenon all of your life as well. How did those two come together? And before we link you with Michael, you were here independent of that.
Well, I actually moved to the island about a year ago. And before that, I was in the intuitive healing arts for about 12 years and teaching people clairvoyance, telepathy, how to develop their intuitive skills, and really how to expand one's consciousness and go beyond the normal parameters of five senses. And I've always had a connection with the ET element, and I came to swim with the dolphins here in Hawaii and was just so enraptured with that element of what the dolphins brought. I mean, it seemed like such a natural fit to swim with the dolphins and their empathy and their telepathy, just bringing out these wonderful abilities in people and helping them to see at a whole new level their reality. So I moved here, brought those elements of my past work into the ET work, mm-hmm. Which is now all about informing people about how it's time to reach out and to connect with the ETs.
Mm-hmm.
They're offering us so much information, and they've traveled the road already that we're about to travel.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like family or a big brother or sister reaching out and saying, okay, we know the pitfalls of this path. We love you very much. We want to see the best for you. And so, you know, if you begin a dialogue, there's so much information that'll come through.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. Well, the two of you provide that sort of dynamic dual approach, and I don't want to say just that you're cerebral and you're heart oriented, but there's a combination of the masculine and feminine dynamic that goes on in any relationship, male female relationships, and it's really nice when the two of them can work together, particularly to address something that is so nebulous in our cultural matriability. Well, so you both came here, and you both found that the dolphins were indeed kind of like an extraterrestrial intelligence. Joan always likes to refer to them because they're not of the land, so they are extraterrestrial. And John Lilly was the first one that brought that to her attention. Did you find or expect that when you came, and when you found them on some kind of communicative level, did you relate it specifically to extraterrestrial intelligence?
Well, I didn't expect it when I came out here, so I was really thrilled to find that the dolphins are really such an intelligent species, and that they have abilities that really deserve recognition of them as a nation. And that was one of the things I found very rewarding when I began to do a little bit of research on John Lilly,
mm-hmm.
that he did talk about the cetacean nation,
mm-hmm.
the idea that the cetaceans deserve some recognition, that in terms of the governance of the planet, the representative bodies of the planet, the cetaceans deserve some place in that. And I'm really thrilled by that, because that really added another element to this whole extraterrestrial phenomenon, because typically what people were thinking of, and certainly what I was thinking of before I came here, was that here we are, humans on this planet, and there are extraterrestrials out there, and you know, we've got to get our act together to kind of negotiate and have diplomatic relations with these ETs off planet. Well, then when I got here was a vivid demonstration of this non-human intelligent species that inhabit the oceans, and that they're a nation, and that we are systematically violating their rights.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that, to me, was such a groundbreaking idea. I realized that, oh, okay, what we need to do here before we actually start up harmonious relations with extraterrestrials is get our act together with the kind of non-human intelligent species on the planet, like the cetaceans, and kind of respect their rights and have some kind of representation happening here. And then we can kind of look at even the broader aspect of Gaia as this, the Gaia hypothesis, and Gaia as this kind of entity in homeostasis, and that, you know, what is it that we do to bring Gaia out of balance, and,
mm-hmm.
and how can we work with Gaia to produce that? So, you know, ideas like a network of voices,
mm-hmm.
where you have humanity working with the intelligent species on the planet, both on the surface, in the oceans, and possibly underground as well,
mm-hmm.
because I think that there's a lot of research pointing to that. And then bringing together or harmonizing this network of voices so that we, as one of the intelligent species on the planet,
mm-hmm.
can effectively coordinate with the other intelligent species here, so that we can then get our act together so that the planet as a whole benefits from interaction with off-world species.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, Angelica, your impression of the dolphins was a little bit different, but still coming from, you're an artist and a creative person, so a lot of the information that you started to feel, I assume, came in on this intuitive inward towards the outward thing. How was your experience in the first dolphin experiences and related later to the ETs?
Well, I think 2 years before I ever swam with the dolphin, they came to me in my meditations, mm-hmm. and they said, this is something you're going to be doing in the future. Mm-hmm. We're inviting you to come. And they, along with some other communications from other beings at other frequencies, were coming in, and this idea that Michael just mentioned about the network of voices, or starting to appreciate there are all these different factions on Mother Gaia, mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. really need to be honored and appreciated and brought to the table, each given respect. And as we harmonize into a single voice, then something very powerful occurs. And I think this really then ties into the ET work, mm-hmm. because as we start to show our spiritual maturity and start to take responsibility for having loving relationships with all the beings on the planet, then we reach out into the galactic community and we show that, you know, we're ready. Mm-hmm. We're putting our best foot forward. Mm-hmm. We're giving a good impression and showing that we deserve to now have cultural exchanges begin, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. so that we can take steps further, you know, spiritually, technologically, in mm-hmm. all ways.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, John Lilly coined the phrase the Cetacean Nation from his work in the early 60s, where he was working first as a neurophysiologist and doing brain scans and actual dissections of dolphins to find out what made them tick. And it occurred to him early on that here was a species that was far more intelligent than they had ever been credit for. And later on in his research, and I did put an outline of his work on a website I created a couple of years ago called the CetaceanNation.com. And it's an outline of how we can get this indigenous species, perhaps the root race of planet Gaia, to be recognized in the United Nations and afforded the same kind of basic human rights, or let's say sentient rights, as other indigenous species. Well, or indigenous races. We have been struggling with that throughout the course of our history, and it's a limited history at this point in time, and there's hints that it's much more being. The dolphins and whales have been called the gatekeepers and the record keepers of this whole history of this planet. For me, we're graduating as a species, a human species, to just now beginning to remember ourselves as a planetary consciousness. And this is the gateway that we're all facing. As we step through that threshold, we're beginning to recognize that as a planetary consciousness, we have galactic responsibilities. More and more people are relaxing and letting go of those stringent ways of looking. The linear constructs that have held us in place, or the grips are loosening and loosening. And part of it is the work that you guys are involved in. This is Dolphinville Radio, brought to you by Photon.net, your internet service provider. Dolphinville Radio, welcome. So I want to talk about a little bit of the work that you guys are introducing. The first thing up that's coming up for all of us is this conference, the 10th, 11th, and 12th.
Well, the whole idea of having contact with different extraterrestrials was something that we began to explore as an experiential exercise. And so doing the group work was really a means for people who, on an individual level, may have great difficulty in trying to establish some connection with different extraterrestrials, but when you're in a group, there's a greater synergy there, and so there's a greater ability to establish contact through some telepathic or some empathic communication. And so in the group, what we found in the groups that we're meeting at Jones, and you've had much more experience than I have in terms of what Jones had there, but in the last 8 months or so that I've been here, what I've found is that in the group's environment, we're able to establish these communications, and it's much deeper than you can achieve as an individual. And of course, Joan got the inspiration to do the conference, the ET Civilizations and Dolphin Conference, and I think that's just part of what is being presented to us as the future that we need to move down, which is try to coordinate who we are with the other sentient species on the planet, the dolphins, and move in terms of trying to establish some connection or some contact with extraterrestrials. And so Joan's idea of the conference came out of that association that was being developed in those groups. She felt that she was being guided by the Andromedans to move ahead with this, try to kind of establish some greater public awareness of the extraterrestrial presence. And so the conference is now going ahead, and I'm delighted to be there as a speaker.
Well, a couple of years, well, just a little over a year ago, almost a year and a half ago now, Joan and I started a series of radio shows, which really spawned Dolphinville Radio. And it was based around the idea of saying yes. If we start to open up and say yes to the possibilities that this is another sentient races, I do emphasize races, can come into us. But Angelica, tell us your experience when you go into these meditations, and you can sense not only your own connection, but the power, empowerment of the other people connecting at the same time. Does that come out as a specific kind of individualized visions that you then unite when you talk about it? How does it work with, so our listening audience gets an idea of, you know, how to gather collectively and pull in some of these kinds of informational bubbles?
Well, first I'd like to say about that, one thing that is really intriguing that's been going on when we do meet as a group is that we'll find afterward that the ETs seem to be giving us all information that is regarding a particular subject.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be definitely steering the course of where the conversation is going and either giving us visual experiences, feelings, sensations within ourselves that once we share as a group, it turns out that we were basically getting all the same information. So when we come together as a group, as Michael was saying, there's a synergy that happens. And individually, I find that I can, it's almost like riding a wave. It's this energy begins to build as the group all has a cohesive focus.
Mm-hmm.
And so you utilize this focused intention, and you just allow it to build within yourself and take you into that communication. It really magnifies, I feel, and can really add a much more dynamic quality when you are in the group setting.
Mm-hmm.
And many people say, you know, I don't have much luck once I go off on my own.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I sit in the group setting, then all of a sudden it becomes clear. And it really is because as you come together as a group and unite your energies, there's an exponential effect that happens energetically.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like you become more than the four bodies, the six bodies, the 12 bodies, or how many
mm-hmm.
ever people are joining together.
Mm-hmm. Well, Joan seemed adamant about trying to get people who were past the idea of doubt or fear with regards to the presence other than non-human, as if their energies or their uncertainties or their doubts would somehow create wave frequencies that would offer interference from clear reception. Do you find that that's the case when you get with a group of mixed believers, so to speak?
Well, I find that when that happens, that the people who are experienced or who are so enthusiastic that they just want to make contact with those benevolent ETs, nothing gets in the way. Nothing's going to stop them.
Mm-hmm.
But those people who do have fear and doubts usually tend to have either no experience, you know, it's just like the airwaves are dead for them, or they perhaps feel a bit of anxiety, like something else was trying to connect with them that they didn't feel was the respectful, gentle, loving presence that they would have liked to have.
Maybe there's safety in numbers in that regard, too. I know when we take people into the ocean and this is their first experience and they're stepping into the deep blue abyss and they don't know what is down there or what could be coming out and all of the stories that have been told before of giant jaws and whatnot, it rings true with all of us. There's a, like a resident fear of going in there. And so part of our job of facilitating is help people relax into that. Now, as a facilitator and one of the presenters of at the conference, and I've been asked to do the MC work here, so I kind of sense the responsibility of trying to hold a collective energy. And what I see as a couple of hundred people coming together in an audience is a potential to really amp up, as you say, exponentially, bringing together a collective bubble of intelligence and acceptance. And within itself, that grand experiment may yield some very interesting results. As you say, each person gets an individual a kind of filtered message, what we can all accept and what we're open to and what we can define in our own terms. But then collectively, like a hologram, we bring our little pieces together, and then suddenly that whole hologram becomes that much clearer, and we could start to get a bigger picture, bigger than the one little piece that we had by ourselves. So I really feel the potential there for the ET, Dolphin and ET Civilizations Conference is what's going to happen when we bring 15 presenters from all over the world, all bringing our filtered information, very specific, onto the common platform, and then being, surrounded by people who are wishful, hopeful, and wanting to see the feel the sensation of what all of that feels like when we do say yes, and yes, charges go off. So it's kind of an experiment in time and space for all of us. I think we're all waiting with excitement and anticipation as to what could materialize.
Identified flying objects that appear to display unique characteristics, such as their speed, their rapid maneuvering, and so on, must be studied in the interest of mankind.
You're listening to Dolphinville Radio. This is your host, Dolphinus. Welcome aboard. Sometimes there is an atmosphere that's generated. We've all experienced that, where everybody is feeling the tingling sensation and there's a crackling in the air and we see some lights in the sky or some kind of orb or perhaps a cloud form. Okay, well, wait a minute. This is more than just a collection of raindrops up there. This is something that's beaming down information. So part of it is making that accessible. And the work that you guys have decided to do is making that information accessible. And yet, you've got some startling information. You want to introduce people to, you know, a myriad of different ET civilizations. And you want to make it easy for them to understand it in a non-threatening way. So how does that work, and how will that be fit in there?
Well, it's basically just giving people some awareness that this is not new, that there has been direct interactions between individuals and ETs for decades, and that these interactions have been very benevolent, very positive, and that the individuals who have come away from those interactions typically have had their lives changed profoundly, that their consciousness has been dramatically shifted, and that they have some wonderful news to share with large numbers of people or anyone that's willing to hear. So in a sense that they've become ambassadors for the extraterrestrials that contacted them. And so what we've had over the last five decades is numbers of individuals who have gone through some direct physical interaction with ETs. And then, of course, we can add the kind of more ethereal contacts or communications that have occurred. But if we just focus on the direct physical contacts between humans and ETs, we've had quite a history of that. And citizens' diplomacy is really just the idea that this is something that anyone can do, that this is not something that is left to kind of official diplomatic relations between state-appointed officials and extraterrestrial ambassadors, that citizen diplomacy is this principle that any individual citizen that prepares themselves, that is aware of exactly what the different ET races are doing here, learn a little bit about their history, learn a little bit about what some of the challenges are, that any individual can initiate contact or can bring about some kind of interaction with these ETs and in a sense become diplomats or become peace ambassadors for the planet. And so really citizen diplomacy is this concept of empowering people to believe that they can directly interact with extraterrestrials and that this is a good thing, that this is a very helpful thing for the planet, and it really is the future for us all.
Really where we start to access. At a certain point, we've accessed enough to convince ourselves that it's no longer just a belief, but it is a knowing, and now that knowing then can be shared with others. And this is where the power comes in. Wouldn't you agree, Angelica?
Oh, absolutely. Unfortunately, there's been in our media quite a bit of information, especially about the abduction experience.
Mm-hmm.
This puts fear in a lot of people, and I've met many people who said just because of their reading or what they've heard, they don't want anything to do with any ET.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care how benevolent you say there are these groups out there. And so really what we're doing, I think, is empowering people with information.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you're educated, once you know, really get a strong foundation about the activities, the motivations that we've been able to watch and track, and we convey this, and then teach you the skills with telepathy, with clairvoyance, with remote viewing, to tune in on different wavelengths. It really opens the door to such a grand experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's taking us to a new frontier, but we're preparing you for that experience. So once you go out on that trail, you have all the tools that you need so that you can succeed and have a great time with it.
Well, I think having a great time, I like that phrase, because what the dolphins have shown to me is that you have to keep it light. What are some of the ways that people have been disempowered for contact, would you say, Angelica?
Well, what I just mentioned with the information out in books and the media is a big way that people feel like they can't say no.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like they have no control. And the information that they're getting, they know that it's tainted. They know that there's some truth to it, but it's not fully true. And so they don't know who to trust.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they haven't developed for themselves a real strong sense of discernment yet, and so they feel like they just don't want to head down that path because they need to protect themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there are many, many things that we can do to completely change this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And again, education is the key to helping people to get beyond really this false picture that's been painted.
Mm-hmm.
Because by far, the number of groups out there who want to communicate with us and who are currently visiting this planet, and we have this verified by so many sources, you know, physical contactees, insiders within the government, even within the military, people are coming forward and saying there is so much goodness and light out there. And it's reaching out and it's just saying, you know, you have free will on planet Earth and we respect that. So as soon as you're ready, we'll work with you, but it's up to you to take the step. So that's what we really want to help people do, is to take that step and say, yes, I'm going to take responsibility for initiating contact. And so right there, you've just empowered yourself.
I think that's a very important step.
What Angelica said, educating people is really the key. There's an incident described in a book by a contactee, Enrique Castillo Rincon, where he describes how he was taken up into the ships by the Pleiadians.
Mm.
And he asked the Pleiadians, well, why don't you just simply show yourself to people? Why don't you just kind of do mass contact? And they said, well, we'll show you. So what they did was they showed a farmer in the field with his family, and so they had a holographic image of the farmer there, and then they said, well, have a look at this. And so they then went down with their ship towards the farmer and his family, and when the farmer and his family saw the ship, they just kind of ran.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Pleiadians looked at Enrique and basically it was like, well, now do you see? And he said, well, that was just a farmer, an uneducated farmer. I mean, if you showed up to educated people, they would respond differently. They'd say, okay, well, we'll show you. So then they got back in into the ship in terms of travelling through the countryside of Colombia, and then they went on to a highway, and on the highway there was a car, and inside the car they could see through the ship's technology, they could see a couple of well-dressed businessmen in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Pleiadians did the same thing. Okay, well, we'll go down and we'll see what happens. So they went down in front of the car. The businessmen saw the ship. They stopped the car, ran out, and jumped some fence and just kept running. It was just such
freak
a vivid
out.
Demonstration
mm-hmm.
of just how people react when they're not prepared, when they're
mm-hmm.
not educated. And really, that's what we're doing. We're
mm-hmm.
trying to educate people by giving them the information.
Well, why do you think there's such a need now for an understanding of, say, galactic history?
Well, because as you caught yourself a little early in terms of ET races as opposed to an ET race,
mm-hmm.
there are a number of different races here visiting the planet, and these races have a history. What exactly is their history? What have they been doing on the planet Earth and off planet? How have they interacted, and in what ways does that reflect upon us?
Mm-hmm.
Because what I have found is that we have had the planet seeded by different ET races throughout the history, and it appears that certain races on the planet have a stronger association to some ET races than other ET races. And so what that means is that in a way you can almost see the Earth as a kind of like a proxy football field, the stadium, where, you know, these ETs, they have their favourite teams down here, the teams that they have kind of recruited or
mm-hmm.
from wherever
mm-hmm.
around the galaxy, and they're rooting for their team.
Sure.
So if we know a little bit about galactic history, we know a little bit about, well, how it is that the interaction between these different kind of national entities on the planet
mm-hmm.
reflect the different priorities between ET races.
Mm-hmm.
So what that, I believe, helps us do is to become a little more nuanced, a little more aware that galactic history is very complex and that it is very much reflected in our Earth history.
Mm-hmm.
And so that will help us interact with ETs in a way that benefits us all rather than kind of making some major mistakes. I think the road in which technology is moving is something towards a kind of a virtual reality that, if we're not careful, can more or less become imposed upon humanity that isn't really made aware of exactly where we're going and the forces behind us. Because I think we do have special gifts that are related to the kind of things Angelic was talking about in terms of our psychic abilities. I think that on this planet, for whatever reason, it still isn't quite clear that we have a tremendous number of very powerful psychics that ETs are aware give a certain power to humans that they don't have. Many researchers who have done some studies of the dialogues between contactees and ETs remark on some of the things that ETs say, which is that humans are incredible. They don't really understand how incredible they are. We need technology to manifest things. Humans can do it by the power of their mind.
Mm.
So with this incredible power that humanity has, I think we need to be aware that there are certain ET races that don't really wish the best for us and want to use us as a resource, a psychic resource,
mm-hmm.
where more or less they kind of create an artificial reality around us, a virtual reality where they can manipulate our psychic abilities
mm-hmm.
for purposes that suit their long-term agenda. And we need to be very aware of that and
mm-hmm.
prevent that from happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think being aware and trying to separate the wheat from the chaff, so to speak, so that the information that's being given to us, that is disinformation, to keep us just parallel or off the real track of what's going on, gets back to this discernment issue. It's almost like a closed loop. You have to take responsibility for your own actions. You have to become personally aware, self-aware. It's like the old Delphi edict, to know thyself. Once you start to get to that plane of awareness, then you've reached another ability to see the world around you. And perhaps that's what the ET races, or the non-physical, and I hate to say that we're just talking about ETs here, because what's become very obvious to me as we open up through the avenues of dolphins and whales as being another bona fide, provable, sentient intelligence. And if there's one, guess what? There's more than one. And if there's more than one, there's probably dozens. And it's important to remain open. And this doorway that we're going through is, I think, a critical one for us to reach this next level. What do you think about the phenomenon, and I'll ask you both this question, where our relationship to the element or construct of time is going to be dramatically shifted? Do you feel that this is different, and what do you see as coming in these next 5 to 7 years?
I see a huge opportunity that's being presented to us. We go through these huge cycles, and many ET races have talked about this, and also in our ancient history and in Mayan history, there's written about these massive galactic cycles. And 2012 is many, many different groups are acknowledging this as the end of a particular cycle. And from what I've gained through all these different sources, what I believe is happening is that basically we're going to be given an opportunity to shift our awareness to a huge degree. And you will be able to take advantage of this opportunity, and it will be dependent upon how much personal work you've put into it, in evolving your own consciousness, in expanding your own spiritual evolutionary sense of beingness. Because I think what's going to happen here is it's like we're going to be pivoting off of a fulcrum point. Mm-hmm. And those people who have really been paying attention and doing their homework are going to have the opportunity not only to go in consciousness to, say, the fourth dimensional plane, but perhaps to go much farther beyond. So it's all about your heart, spirit, and evolving into the highest possibility for each individual. Mm-hmm. And concurrently, those people who are not paying attention, or those people who are centered completely on the self, self-service, mm-hmm. instead of service to others, mm-hmm. They most likely are going to just continue along the same plane of consciousness. It's like having to repeat the same grade over again. Mm-hmm. So here we are, we're ready for graduation, mm-hmm. and those people who have passed the test, service to others, expanding consciousness, developing love, wisdom, discernment, they're going to get to take it as far as they can go.
This is Dolphinville Radio. You're a scholar. You've been in education all of your life, and it's been based on showing people a series of facts and figures, having them make an assessment and a logical leap of awareness to make a conclusion about something. But here we're facing something that's totally intangible, almost nebulous, with no real facets. How is a man in your position as a scholar help people to come to terms with those?
Well, 2012 is really a mysterious event. I mean, we know that there's something significant about this whole theory of everything on this planet going through some kind of dimensional shift into a higher realm, where all of a sudden these potentials come online, all the junk DNA and the different strands of the DNA all of a sudden give us abilities that we haven't been able to access for thousands of years. So that's really quite difficult for a lot of people, and I think that the role of the ETs may well be to prepare us for this, that they are here to awaken us to the potential that we have and to what lies ahead. And that as we become more aware of ETs, as we move closer and closer to 2012, I think what's happening is that we will see in ETs abilities that mirror latent abilities within us. And so as we begin to kind of learn more about ETs, as we begin to establish connections with them, communication connections and all sorts of interactions with them, that we as a species will start to spontaneously start changing, mutating to mirror what abilities the ETs are showing to us. And so I guess these spontaneous interactions, which are happening in ways that cannot be quite worked out fully, but we know that they are very closely connected to the ways ETs choose to interact with certain individuals in certain places. It's not unique, it's not by chance in my view that they would choose to contact a particular individual in a certain location, say in the Andes or in somewhere in the Hawaiian Islands. There's reason for that, and I think that the overall effect will be that there are going to be certain numbers of peoples or groups of peoples around the planet that come online in a way that might be related to the planetary grid.
Mm-hmm.
And that awakening of these isolated groups of people and individuals around the planet aligned with the planetary grid will somehow help the shift of humanity from this kind of closed, insular culture to a much more awakened and aware interplanetary culture, which then means not only are we able to interact directly with ETs, but we're also ready for whatever it is 2012 brings to us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good point. I think a lot of people out there are curious, what is this relationship? Now that you're using the Prepare for Contact, which is the name of your workshop and the work that you're doing, you rely heavily on the place where you are on the planet, the middle of the Hawaiian Islands, and also the dolphins.
Exactly, yes. The dolphins are clearly a very advanced species that bring about a certain shift in one's awareness when you're swimming with them. As you know, when you're in their presence in the waters, I mean, it's an outer world. It's an out of surface experience. We're in the water, wearing our snorkels, we're suspended above the bottom of the ocean, and we have these dolphins swimming around us, and they often swim around in formation or come up close to us, and their sonar is constantly pinging us, and we are able to feel their emotions, and we, those of us who are telepathically aware, are able to communicate with them. So what you're having is a kind of a multifaceted interaction with these very advanced beings, and what I believe that does is very clearly prepare us for contact with extraterrestrial races, because what will happen there will be, again, similar dynamics where you'll have an experience with this out of world or out of the kind of surface environment that we habituate, that it'll be out of that, whether we're in a ship or whether it happens in a remote location. So that will be something that will really be very critical for bringing online all of these abilities.
We have a being from the Dog Star who's making his presence known, for any of you who are hearing that in the background. He probably just wants attention sent up towards Sirius. You mentioned telepathy. Would you consider yourself a telepath?
I wouldn't consider myself a telepath. I'm more the empath. I have the ability to just feel things in people, read energy through books, for example, or through different environments that I'm in. I'm able to kind of, just empathically connect with beings. Angelica is more the telepath, so she's able to do that with much more clarity that I could ever hope to achieve. And it just seems to be a kind of division of labor based on people having different kind of sensory priorities in their own life. Some are more telepathic, some kinesthetic, some more into empathy. So it seems that, you know, we're very varied. But for me, it's much more an empathic connection, and I can certainly feel the energy of ETs.
Mm-hmm.
I can feel them approaching empathically, and that is an interaction at an empathic or a high dimension level, but it's certainly not a communication. There is a communicative element there, but not in the way that we normally think of communication, where you have ideas coming into your head.
Right. Well, how would you describe your telepathic experiences then, that that our listeners might be able to get a grip and a handle on that?
Well, I think I'd like to talk a little bit about how I work with people to get them to develop their own telepathy. Basically, telepathic communications if you practice meditation, it's the same technique that you're going to use to help develop telepathy. Because in meditation, what you do is you basically turn your attention inward, you try to quiet all the chatter and all the voices, and then you listen. Well, for telepathy, it's the same thing. Many people are confused when they think that a telepath is reaching out into the other person's brain and pulling out information. It has nothing to do with reaching out beyond yourself, just the opposite. It's about turning fully inward with your attention, and just like with meditation, quieting the voices. And once you achieve a certain level of stillness, all of a sudden a miracle happens. And that miracle is that different airwaves start to open up. It's like a whole network begins to come online for different information sources mm-hmm. other than your five senses. Mm-hmm. And you'll begin to feel the input of all this new sensory information coming within yourself. Mm. And then that you begin to digest and understand what it means. Some people, and sometimes with myself, with telepathy, I hear clear words and statements. But other times, it's a series of images and understandings. And so that can be even richer in what it's conveying. And so these abilities, these intuitive abilities, will all begin to come online somewhat simultaneously, although most people have a dominant skill mm-hmm. that'll rear its head, and that will be your preference. Mm-hmm. But all people possess these, and we can really help people down this pathway of getting to be comfortable with them and putting them to work. Mm-hmm.
To Dolphinville Radio, www.dolphinville.com. Thanks for listening. We're talking about telepathy, though. We're talking about telempathy, which is a word that I heard Joan coin years ago in explaining that, as you said, it's not just a mental construct. It is more of a body awareness. It is more of an etheric bringing in. Now, how would you say these techniques that you tell people understand, what would be the difference between this telepathy and remote viewing?
Well, remote viewing basically is using one's clairvoyance to look at something beyond your immediate environment. And, of course, remote viewing was developed by psychics. And having talked to some people in the field, like I had a question about something I had read, and it might have been in one of Courtney Brown's books, where they had a remote viewer who was able to actually go inside file cabinets and read words off of documents. And I thought, holy cow, you know, I've been psychic since I was a kid, but I cannot pinpoint to that level. Mm-hmm. So I had the great fortune to sit next to Dr. Simeon Hine, who worked with Courtney Brown at the Farsight Institute, and he knew about this particular remote viewer. As it turns out, this remote viewer was a natural psychic since childhood, and that's all he was doing. He was just using his natural psychic abilities. Remote viewing is for those who don't feel quite as comfortable with their natural talent. And so it's giving a set of parameters. It's giving a very stringent framework in which to work to kind of take the conscious mind out of the picture and start to gather information from the more intuitive channels. But there's really no difference between remote viewing and just clairvoyantly or psychically reaching out your senses and connecting with information that's beyond your immediate environment.
Hmm. Would you say, both of you or individually, that this kind of experiential awareness is a necessary tool to access communication with the ETs?
I think that it would be so beneficial if everybody who heard this interview here would sit down and begin a meditation practice.
Mm-hmm.
Because meditation is the key to not only developing your intuitive skills, but to developing personal discernment, to cleansing out the fear and the different blockages that you have, to really stepping forward into this great vast unknown, this beautiful mystery, and opening up and, you know, just feeling good about welcoming whatever is coming to the door.
Hmm.
It's going to be a beautiful experience for those who really do find the courage within themselves to let go of some of these old constructs and just really open their hearts and their minds to a new reality.
Well, it's all good stuff, and we definitely need to move into these kinds of things, and thank goodness we have people such as yourselves who are gently bringing us into these new levels of awareness. And not making them threaten me, because there's so many teachers and people who are in positions of authority who are using the fear matrix in order to gather power for themselves. And I see that as an old paradigm that's still being used, but is slowly fading away. So it's encouraging to me, first of all, to see a couple who've come together in full partnership, bringing the best of both of your collective awarenesses to form this third synergistic personality, if you will, or synergistic ability to get this information out. So in June, let's talk very briefly, right after the conference, just immediately on the 14th and the 15th, you're going to be conducting a two-day intensive workshop. Sounds like it might be intensive, going from 10 a.m. till 9 p.m. at night. What are you calling this particular Prepare for Contact workshop? Is that the name of it?
Well, this two-day event we're going to be calling Initiating Contact, and
okay.
It's really aimed, as Angelica explained a little bit earlier, about people being empowered to establish communications with ETs.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be walking them through some of the things that they need to know to be able to be in that position of initiating contact,
mm-hmm.
Learning about the history of ET races, learning about what the different ET races are, learning some of the skills that are going to be needed for establishing communication with the ET races. Also, they'll be walked through some exercises where we'll be doing some of this work, and we'll be actually trying to initiate contact through some of these exercises that Angelica will be leading at the event.
Oh, and then later this same month of June, you're going to have a more extended seminar that is, what was it, 6 days?
It goes 7 days.
7 days.
Six nights.
Okay, 6 nights. And what is that called?
And that one is called Prepare for Contact,
uh-huh.
Introduction to 11 Extraterrestrial Races.
Wow,
and
11.
And so we're going to dive into the heart of it.
Mm-hmm.
We have 11 different ET races that we've identified that are very strongly working with many people upon the planet.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot to offer. We have a lot of information about them to share.
Mm-hmm.
And so we feel like we can really give people a solid educational base, as well as the experiential side of helping them to learn to how to initiate contact,
mm-hmm.
how to identify the different frequencies that these beings communicate at, and to really take them to the next step of, well, a lot of people are coming up to me and saying, you know, Angelica, ever since I was a kid, in my heart, I know that I was meant to be an ET ambassador.
Mm-hmm.
I really, this is true. Many, many people have come up to say this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really touching me because that's what I always felt,
mm-hmm.
when I was a kid, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I never realized it would culminate in work like this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But this 7-day seminar that we're doing, where we're taking people out for dolphin swims, we're doing the contact meditations, giving them the solid information, the scholarly information that Michael has just so beautifully put together.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be entertaining,
mm-hmm.
it's dynamic, it's energetic, and it's empowering.
The venue happens to be a beautiful new hotel, or regenerated hotel here in Kona. is still at the Sheraton Cajo, is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah, that's a beautiful brand new refurbished hotel. It sits right on the oceans. And what's the name of the website that they can address and get more of this information printed out for themselves?
It is www.galacticdiplomacy.com.
All right, galacticdiplomacy.com. And Michael, you have Exopolitics as a website. What's the exact address on that one?
That one is www.exopolitics.org. So
okay,
you get all my information there.
Okay, well, go to Galactic Delta. One of those two, there's just tons of information, and you've given links and access points to some of the research, just the tip of the iceberg, really, because this has been a pretty much a life work for you for all of these many years. Both of you are bringing your life work together. And again, I'm saying this, that it happens to meet in the middle in this wonderful place where both of your belief systems are mirroring each other, and there's no conflict, but instead there's more of a synergistic kind of experience for everybody who might be able to attend these things. So I want to encourage everybody to check out the website. Once again, galacticdiplomacy.com. And Angelica and Michael are there. They are accessible through email, and they would be happy to fill in some more of those questions for you, should you have any of those questions. And on top of all that, I hope that some of you who are listening to this who haven't made up your mind to come to Hawaii for the ET month, this is turning out, because Joan will follow her own workshop right after the conference. There's going to be a number of very high-powered, intensely aware people who are going to be here on the island for the whole month of June. And they're already here, but they're going to be kind of talking with each other. So it's going to be quite an experience. I would encourage any of you who are even thinking about it to go ahead and make your reservations now, because it's coming up right away. And definitely check out these fine people and the information they're providing. So I want to thank you both for being here.
Thank you, Douglas.
Giving us some good stuff to think about. And I know that there's more to come, and we'll touch base, because there's so many stories. We never get to the events that you shared as you were climbing the mountain together. We'll save that for another time, and some of the more personal and intimate things that you two have opened up for yourself. So thank you, and we'll look forward to that thing in the future. And probably we'll maybe get some little tiny interviews between now or during the course of the conference. I don't know what to expect, but hopefully we'll be able to provide some more information for this listening audience. So thanks again, you guys.
Thank you, Douglas.
Aloha.
Aloha to everybody. And this is Douglas Dolphinus saying, see ya next time. You've been listening to Dolphinville Radio, www.dolphinville.com. Thanks for listening. Brought to you by Photon.net, your internet service provider. Thanks for listening.